This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Here are a couple scenarios for you. Some of them may sound familiar. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. You hear the school bus rumbling up the block, and your 7-year-old has not even begun to get dressed. Your 4-year-old returns from a playdate in tears. "Tommy hit me," she sobs, "and broke my new toy." Or an important client calls you at home, and in the middle of your conversation, your 6-year-old asks you, loudly, to help find his shoes, even though you've told him 100 times not to interrupt you when you're on the phone. And just a couple of days before the weekend, your 9-year-old announces that she's not going with you to visit relatives on Sunday. "My teacher said I cheated on a test, but I didn't," says your 11-year-old. How often do your kids argue over toys, computer time, video games, or other possessions? And how frequently do they fight with you, with each other, over anything and everything? How often do they create tension in the house because they don't listen or they won't do what you want to and they talk back? Do you feel as if you've tried everything and nothing has worked? Well, if you're looking for a different way to handle situations like these, this show is for you. Because a ton of research shows that kids who can think through and successfully solve everyday problems for themselves have fewer behavior problems and do better in school than kids who can't think that way. And in this show, we're going to be helping you learn how to teach your kids how to think, not what to think.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
As an 18-year-old, I let my mistakes kind of take over my life. I was 0.5 credits away from completing high school, and I didn't do it.
10 years later, at age 28, Jackie finished her high school diploma.
When I found out that I was pregnant, I know that I had to do something for myself if I wanted to make her a better person and provide a better life for her. My family never stopped pushing for me to be better because they knew what I could become and who I could become as a person. My support team is amazing. The educational director, my sister, and even my 7-year-old daughter has just been more than the support that I could ask for. I've been given an opportunity, and I'm just thankful for it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey there, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, the founder of MrDad.com, and my guest for this part of today's show is Myrna Schur, who's the author of Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, Turning Everyday Problems into Solutions. It's the second edition and much updated. Myrna, thanks for joining us, or I should say rejoining us. You were on the show quite a while ago.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back with you, Armin. It's fun talking about parenting with you.
Well, it's fun talking about parenting with you, too. You've got a unique perspective on all of this, and want to have you start off talking a little bit about executive function, since that's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, and you deal with it a lot in this book, and help us kind of get a little bit of a background information about what that is.
Well, executive functioning is a term that includes several skills. One of the most important ones is ability to inhibit emotions and control your impulses. So let's say a child wants a toy from another child, and he can either react impulsively without thinking and just grab the toy or hit the child or do whatever he feels he has to do to get the toy immediately, or he can control his impulses and think about, more positive ways to get what he wants without negative consequences. Another one is if he can't have what he wants, he gets very upset emotionally, has a temper tantrum, can't control his emotions, which is lacking that aspect of executive functioning. And there's other aspects to it, but those are, I think, the two mm-hmm. most important ones for parents to really try to guide.
Well, where When is the appropriate time to start paying attention to this stuff with your kids as a parent? Because obviously an infant is not going to be able to do any of these things. So
right.
when is it reasonable to expect that your child is going to have some or develop some skills, and when can you start helping to instill those
skills?
Well,
you can start helping children probably as soon as they have any understanding of language, starting around two. But you can, the way you treat infants has a lot to do with how they have a need to release negative emotions or act in a way that they feel frustrated. So what we do is we play games with puppets and have children enjoy the process of learning these skills. And one of the things we do is play with the word same and different in fun ways. And you can do this as early as age two, but we start in our, by 3 or 4, all kids can respond to this. And you know, you can just point to your nose and say, "This is my nose," and then point to your nose again and say, "I just pointed to the same thing," and then point to something different. And, you know, go around the house and point to things that are the same and different until kids can tell you. And then they have fun with those words. And then when they're having a temper tantrum, instead of yelling at the child and making him feel more frustrated and angry, you can just simply say, "Can you think of a different way to tell me how you feel?" And the word different rings a fun bell. And we play games with several different word pairs, and helping children think about how they can, get what they want or cope with frustration when they can't have what they want.
All right, so give us another word pair. That was really great, because I was thinking as you were saying that, all right, I want to ask what's the connection here between same and different, but that's great. So what's a different way? So what's another word pair?
Well, another word pair that you can start when children are very young is and is not. This is a chair. It is not, and most kids will say something like table or something related, and they say, "Oh, let's have some fun with this. This is a chair. It is not a balloon. What else is it not?" And then kids will walk around the house. Some kids will walk around on their own and go, "This is not a giraffe. This is not a movie theater." You know, kids will start having a lot of fun with this. And then when they're, let's say, again, using the same example of grabbing a toy or doing something you don't want them to do, you can say, "Is what you're doing a good idea or not a good idea?" And the word "not" rings a fun bell. And then you can combine the word pairs and say, "If it's not a good idea, can you think of something different that is a good idea?" And they love combining those word pairs with thinking about what they're doing. And, you can give children puppets and let the puppets tell you, you know, what is and is not a good idea. And, and then we get into how people feel. If you hit him, how do you think he'll feel? What might happen next? Might and maybe is another word pair. It might rain today. It might not rain today. What might happen next if, so we have all kinds of examples of word pairs.
All right. Well, let me stop you for just a second, because I'm very curious about the next part of this, or the most important part of it, really, which is, how does this play out? Are kids who are learning these word pairs and other ones like it and that particular approach, are they different than other kids who are not, in terms of their ability to solve problems? I mean, because I could see that this could be a really fun thing to do, but,
important?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's obviously a very important question. Why do we bother to teach kids these word pairs? When children can solve their own problems, and into the book we have a lot of examples of helping children resolve their own problems, they're much more likely to carry out solutions that have less negative consequences in light of how the other child or parent or other adult or whoever they're having the problem with feels. in light of what might happen next. If they don't like what might happen next, what else can they do that won't make somebody angry or sad? And how you feel. You know, children need to know that somebody cares how they feel, too. What we found in over 30 years of research now is that children who are good at this, good problem solvers, show fewer behaviors that are, you know, negative, aggression, over-emotionality, inability to, you know, get along well with others, social inhibition, too. And most importantly, it turns out, children who are pro-social, who care about other people and how they feel. And these behaviors, if children don't outgrow them or have the skills to help them cope with the way they feel that gets them through the problems that they have,
right.
That can be very high risk for later more serious problems when they get into late right. middle school and high school.
All right,
and
so there's a quick question because we're coming up on a break, but how does this help them solve the problems on their own? It sounds like the parents who are helping with these word pairs and things like that are facilitating a way of thinking about things differently, but we're hoping that they're going to be able to start doing this on their own, right?
Right, and how do they come up with their own solutions? You know, children gather information all the time, and it turns out what we found in our research is you don't have to tell. By the time children are 4 years old, most children, I should say, have heard suggestions and explanations and, you know, you should do this because if you don't, you know, that will happen. They've heard those 1,000 times. The 1,000th and first time isn't going to change anything. And we found that when they tell us their solution, they're much more likely to carry it out than when we suggest, explain, and, you know, tell them what to do and why. And it's a process of thinking more than a content. It's how they think more than what they think that guides behavior.
I'm talking with Myrna Schur, who's the author of Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, Turning Everyday Problems into Solutions. It's the updated second edition. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to keep talking to Myrna. We're going to start getting into some of the specifics in the book. We'll talk about dealing with feelings and emotions and how to handle and prevent problems, and maybe a little bit about nurturing relationships as well. And by the way, if you miss any part of the show, you can always catch up with it on MrDad.com. I'm Armin Brandt, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman, something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right, but don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio pre-diabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, talking with Myrna Schur, who's the author of Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, Turning Everyday Problems into Solutions. Myrna, so let's get into some of the specifics here. We've talked about the word pairs, which I think are really great. And how do we start, for example, with stress? I mean, kids get stressed about homework. Even kids who are 5 and 6 years old, we're hearing about that they're stressed about the pressure that's put on them or expectations. And how do we, first of all, recognize stress in a child? And then how do we help them, particularly young ones, deal with it?
Well, you can tell a child is stressed by he doesn't want to talk about something, his posture changes, his facial expressions change. It becomes pretty obvious that his whole mannerisms change. And sometimes it's hard to discern what the reason is. It could be a lot of different reasons. And then you can start by asking him, did something happen in school today that made you feel upset about something? And rather than assuming you know and trying to, you know, give him suggestions on what to do, get him to tell you how he's feeling and what's bothering him. And he might say, I don't know, or I don't want to talk about it, or he just shrugs his shoulders. And it's important to just say, well, I'm here for you when you want to talk about it, rather than pushing him to talk about it now if he doesn't want to, because that'll stress him out even more. And then when he does come to you, and most kids will eventually, especially when they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, make sure that you do talk to them and not say, well, I'm too busy, I can't talk now. A lot of times that happens. And if you really are too busy and can't talk now, let's talk about a time we can talk and make a time to get together and let the child know that you'll be there then. It's very important that the child have that sense of security that you will talk to him about it when he is ready. Now, what do you do about the stress test? Again, what is it about the test that bothered you? For example, he might say, you know, I didn't know the answers to the questions. I'm going to fail. I'm going to, you know, but that doesn't usually happen until kids are a little older. And then find out, well, what happened? Did you study enough for the exam? Did you know the material? What can you do next time so you'll know the material? And, mm-hmm. you know, children love to plan their day. Sure. You know, instead of, you're not going out with your friends until you get your homework done. Instead of saying, let's plan out the day from the minute you leave school to the time you go to bed. You can draw it out on a piece of paper.
Right.
You know, and let the child decide, is he going to play with his friends and then do his homework, or do his homework and then play with his friends? He's got to have time for what he has to do and learn how to make time to include what he wants to do.
Sure. All right, let me ask you a little bit about some of the solutions. And you've got the book divided into parts about handling problems, nurturing relationships, and dealing with feelings. So talk a little bit about feelings, but I want to get into some of the specifics. And, you know, there's bullying is a big deal these days, whether it's online or in person. And I want to have you talk a little bit about both sides of that, about a child who is the victim of a bully, and how we can help this child deal with that if we're actually going to do it, unless it, you know, taking some other extreme measures.
You know, I had an 8-year-old whose mother was called Bacon at school because he was overweight, and that really bothered him. And the mother would say, well, tell the teacher, or tell him you don't like it, or just walk away. And the parents doing all the thinking and all the talking, and the children kept calling him Bacon. After about 6 weeks of learning how to problem solve, and, you know, being asked these kinds of questions, the child was saying, one day they go, "Bacon, bacon," and he looks at him and he pauses and he says, "Yeah," and "I sizzle, I sizzle." And the kids were so taken aback by that that they never perceived him as weak anymore. You know, the victim is often the victim because they're perceived as weak. When he gave that response, they liked this kid, and he became one of their friends, and 4 years later, he was doing very well in school and was very popular. What a different outcome from a child who's, you know, told what to do, tries it or doesn't try it, and doesn't get the problem solved. Because when it's the child's idea, if the mother had even said, "Tell him you sizzle," you know, it wouldn't have had the same impact. Even so, again, it isn't the content, it's the process of who's doing the thinking and how does he feel about a solution that's successful.
And how about the other side of this, though? Now, you know, if you're a parent and you're paying attention, and I know that a lot of kids, when they're bullying other kids, are kind of playing out what their parents are doing, what they see at home. But if you happen to see your child behaving in a bully-like way, how do you help with that? What's the way that we go about encouraging them to look for other ways to express their anger or whatever it is?
Exactly. And this is obviously a very important problem today. And the more we bully them, so to speak, by punishing them or telling them what to do or yelling at them or isolating them or sending them the timeout, the more angry and frustrated they get, and it doesn't really do any good. So again, we engage in what I call dialoguing, which is these questions I call dialoguing because they're a two-way conversation. It isn't, everything else is a monologue. And when the child is involved in the conversation, he's much more likely to, you know, respond. And there was another child in fifth grade who was the bully. And the parents said, "Well, why do you have a need to bully other children?" And he said, "Because they don't like me, and I want them to be my friend." And that's how they think, some of these kids. And so the mother said, "Well, what happens when you, you know, yell at them and threaten them and bully them?" Well, they run away. Well, is that what you want to happen? No. Can you think of something different to do so that won't happen? And he paused, and it didn't happen right away, but in time, he came to the conclusion that if I don't behave that way, they might not run away from me. And so they had another dialogue a little bit later, and he said, "You know, if I want to be their friend, maybe I can be their friend, and they'll be my friend too." And he behaved very differently after that. And the mother told me that simple little conversation not only changed his behavior, but he did better in school after that academically.
Wow. All right. So I think we have time for one more short one. What about a kid who does not seem to understand health issues and eats terrible food and, you know, you can control what the kids are eating at home, but you can't control after a little while what they're eating outside the home. How do we get them to take charge of that?
Well, again, it's a matter of getting them to understand potential consequences. And, you know, you can guide a behavior. You can guide a child to thinking without giving them the answer. You know, and if you say, what might happen if you eat, potato chips and chocolate cake and, you know, all those foods that you eat that aren't good for you, what do you think could happen? And they might say, "I don't know." Now, "I don't know" either means I don't really know or I don't want to talk about it. You don't know which one. And say, "Well, you know, is it possible that you might not feel good in any ways if you don't eat food that's good for you? In what ways might you not feel good?" And then the child might start thinking about that without saying, "Well, you know, you're going to gain weight."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a problem solving.
Right.
And then say, "Well, can you think of foods that you can eat that you might like that might not make you gain weight?" It's asking questions rather than telling the child. That's the key. to problem-solving thinking. Letting the child tell you instead of you telling him. And it works from as early as age 4. And our research took us through the preteen years. And it works with adults, too, by the way.
Right.
I could give you some examples of that.
Well, to find out how that works, you're going to have to pick up the book. It's called Thinking Parent, Thinking Child, Turning Everyday Problems into Solutions, a second edition. It's by Myrna Schur. Now, interestingly, the book is not available in bookstores. It's only available on Amazon as a paperback or a Kindle book, or it's at your website, right, Myrna? What's the website?
My website is www.thinkingchild.com.
Sounds great. Thanks, Myrna.
Thanks, Armin. I really appreciate this.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brandt, founder of MrDad.com. You know, summer is just around the corner, and of course, that means that I'm getting a lot of questions about teens and summer jobs, and here's one from an actual teen. Dear Mr. Dad, I want to get a job this summer, but my parents are refusing to give me permission. They say I'm too young, but I disagree. I'm turning 15 a week before school ends, and some of my friends have had summer jobs for a few years. I'm jealous that they have their own money to spend and don't have to ask their parents for it, which I hate doing. What can I do to convince my parents to let me get a job? Well, you know, you got me convinced. Your desire to find work and the fact that you're already thinking about it months in advance are clear signs that you are plenty old enough and mature enough to handle a summer job. I guarantee that parents all over the country are listening to this and wishing that their teenager or older child who's still living at home would ask the same thing. That said, your parents may have a point. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, the minimum age for working outside of school hours is 14. But in most states, if you're under 16, you need to get a work permit from your school before you can get a job, even when school's not in session. Certain other age limits may kick in depending on the type of job you're doing and how many hours you'll be doing it, so check with your school guidance counselor. Now, assuming you're on solid legal ground age-wise, sit down with your parents and talk with them about why you want a summer job in the first place and the types of jobs you're most interested in applying for. Ask them what their hesitation is and listen carefully. Maybe they're worried about your safety, either on the job or getting yourself there and back. Those are perfectly reasonable concerns for parents to have, so it'll be up to you to deal with them. You might agree to work only during daylight hours or to look for jobs that you can easily get to and get back from safely. Your parents may have other worries as well. Judging from how much thought and planning you've put into your summer job plans, I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that you're a driven, straight-A student and that you put a lot of pressure on yourself to succeed. If that's true, and I say this as the father of a child who was like that in high school, your parents may feel that you need a break from work and that you should use your summer as a time to unwind and relax. Another reasonable concern, so you should spend some time thinking about how to assure them that you're giving yourself enough downtime to enjoy the summer. If your parents need a little bit more convincing, here are a few ways that having a part-time job are good for you. It'll help you build competence, independence, and self-esteem. It'll also make you even more responsible than you already are. You'll learn a lot of useful skills, such as how to follow instructions, get along with bosses and coworkers, deal with the public, and manage your money. You'll learn something about the value of hard work, and you'll appreciate everything you spend your paychecks on because you'll have earned it, not because mom and dad gave it to you. Once you get your parents on board, which I know you will, don't let yourself get consumed by making money. Balance in life is essential, especially for someone your age, and that means leaving room for family and friends and plenty of downtime to just hang out and be a kid.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.